This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
I just get like halfway through something, and I'm like, ah, that was and then I start over.
And Brock Rahm.
You know, you just think in the winter, you won't need a heater because you just render overnight. Think of the heating costs you're going to save on.
Dane Van Wyatt, the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, joins us in episode 12. We explore his journey moving halfway across the country from his Pennsylvania roots to get his opportunity in sports, why he got out of sports, and ultimately wanted back in as part of Chiefs Kingdom.
In 3, 2, 1, clap.
Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com.
Yep. I'm like such a cynical asshole when I hear other like podcasts and people speak. I'm just like, oh, you could have worded that better. You could. I mean, come on. That's not you shouldn't say it that way. Then I'm up here and I'm just like, welcome to the cast pod where we talk about sports and TV. Speaking of sports and TV, Dane, you've worked in sports and TV since around 2014. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background and where you are today with the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, sure. So I started as an intern in 2014, like you said. I went to school at East Roseboro University. I needed a internship to graduate. So I applied to a bunch. Only heard back from two places. One was MTV and then one was the Chiefs. So I ended up taking the one with the Chiefs, obviously, and that one was unpaid and the MTV one was paid, and I'm from Pennsylvania. So I could have just taken a bus in and gotten money and done all that, but I was like, you know what, I want to work in sports. So I kind of took a leap of faith with a lot of help from family and parents. I moved out here, took the 16-hour drive, packed my 2007 Mercury Sable full of all my clothes and things and drove out here and started in 2014. And I was doing a lot of, when I first started, just doing a lot of logging, that sort of thing. I went on a couple shoots, but it was a lot of like historical logging of tapes and that sort of stuff, which was cool to see. And you actually get to learn a history of the team before, you know, ever actually getting to do anything, which was good. Cause you know, I almost wish that people would come in and do that first. And then they kind of understand the history of the team, I think is really interesting. But I did a lot of that throughout that 14, that was actually the off season of 2014. I started in January. So it was right after the Chiefs tragic loss to the Indianapolis Colts in 2013 in that wild card round, which was, if any Chiefs fans are listening, you know about that game. It was bad. I watched that from home and I was like, oh man, maybe I'll come out and I'll get to go to a playoff game. And then the second half happened and we didn't go to a playoff game. So I started in January of 14. And my last day of that internship was July of 2014. And on my last day of my internship, Jodane Massad, who is now at Notre Dame, who was the director at the time, he goes, hey, you want to come back for a seasonal job? This is my very last day. I had no like inklings of this before. So I'm like, I guess. So I took basically a month off, drove home, got all my stuff, and then came back for training camp. Basically drove right back to Kansas City, went right up to training camp and worked there for the, you know, from training camp to the rest of the season that 2014 year, as a seasonal assistant. And then in 2015, in April of 2015, I hired full-time as a producer. And then, you know, I've just kind of been, I was a producer here from 2015 to 2017-ish. And then actually I decided that I was going to leave. So I left the Chiefs and I went to work as a multimedia designer was the title, but it was essentially a cinematographer and editor. At a, you know, medical technology company called Cerner, which is the largest employer in Kansas City. So it was, you know, I guess it was pretty easy to find a job. But so I got that job there because, you know, I was kind of, you know, I felt like I was in a bit of a creative rut in 2017. I felt like, you know, at the time I'd kind of, you know, done everything that I could with the Chiefs, but that was not true. I was just young and that was my first job ever. And I was like, okay, you know, I think I've done everything here. You know, I need to, you know, mix this up a little bit. Let's figure out, you know, a different way to do that. And it was, you know, changing career paths completely. So, you know, I got hired at Cerner and I was told that we'd be doing a lot of like documentary style content with like patient stories and how Cerner's like technology had been improving the lives of patients and that sort of thing. So that was interesting because I always liked the documentary style side of things. So that was one of the reasons I took that job. When I got there, it didn't, you know, necessarily turn out to be the case. We were doing a lot more corporate video type stuff, a lot of green screen, talking head stuff with some B-roll that we shot at hospitals. And it's actually a lot harder to shoot in a hospital than you would think. So getting a lot of like good B-roll was really difficult. But there were also like, you know, some different commercial style type shoots that I had never done with the Chiefs. You know, we were on sets with actors and hair and makeup and craft services and all that sort of stuff. And it was like, wow, this is interesting. I've never done this before. So, you know, it was a big change and the work wasn't necessarily always like super gratifying. And, I was never really challenged, I would say, but it gave me a good opportunity to, you know, try other things and learn other things. So I learned a lot more advanced lighting techniques and I learned, you know, more After Effects stuff. And I just had a lot more downtime to learn these things and then I could implement them in the things I was doing at Cerner. And then during that time, Pete Sweeney, who runs the SB Nation blog, Arrowhead Pride, which is their Chiefs blog, him and I, he was a Chiefs reporter in, you know, 2015. We got hired on the same exact day. And then he left in 2016 and went and started running that blog. They were going to hire a video producer position on a contract basis. And we'd just make a couple of videos a week for the blog. So we did that. And I got hired for that. And I was like the guinea pig for SB Nation and having like a blog specific like videographer. So, you know, luckily I talked to Christine Canetta, who was the SB Nation. She was like their video head of like video for all the blogs and that sort of thing, all the affiliate blogs. So she hired me and I was working with Pete and we were doing three videos a week. So that was helping supplement my need to do something in sports, because after working at Cerner for about a year, you know, I had a lot of downtime and, you know, I didn't feel as burnt out, you know, as often as I did while working in sports. But at the same time, I needed some sort of challenge. I needed to be working in sports again. So that helped kind of, you know, give me something that was still what I wanted to be doing in sports, which was awesome. And then, you know, I was like, you know what? I don't think I can do the Cerner thing anymore. So in 2017, when I left, I gave him a month's notice. You know, I was still working every home game. And then when the 2018 season started back up, I was working still at Cerner, but I decided to work all the home games still for the Chiefs. And I was shooting all their wires in 2018 on like a contract basis. So I was still a part-time employee from 2015 until now. I never really left the Chiefs. So that was kind of nice when that position did open back up. You know, I still had a relationship with everybody that worked there. I still knew everyone. We all got along really well. Cause you know, I didn't want to burn any bridges with any of those, you know, people that I worked with, because, you know, I got along with all of them and, had no reason to. So that relationship was still there and it was good. So when that position opened back up, you know, I'd been talking to people for a while. And specifically I was talking to one of the producers, Luke Benna, who right now we both work on a documentary style show called The Franchise. And at the time that was something that was still like in conception. So that was something they wanted to do, but they didn't know how they were going to do it or, you know, what it was going to take to pull off. They had done a pilot episode, him and another producer, Evan Miller, that works here at the Chiefs. They'd done a pilot episode and Luke had sent it to me and I looked it over and it looked like it was going to be good. And it was, you know, it was good because it was still stuff that was like hodgepodge together, because they hadn't been like, we're going to shoot this and dedicate to that. So it was sort of like pieced together from things they'd already shot for other things. And I was like, okay, well, if they can do that, you know, with the access that they currently have, if it can get a little better, we'll still be able to make it work. So that was one of the main motivations for me coming back. And that was one of the main reasons I left. We started to do some, you know, off the field features with players and that sort of thing. But I wanted to do more of that. And I always wanted to do a documentary style show that was, you know, sort of, you know, all or nothing esque, Hard Knocks esque, you know, for a team, because I always thought that was like the most compelling content for me to watch personally. So I was like, if you know, if I like to watch that, I'm going to love to make it. And that's really with anything. So, you know, I talked to then their new VP of content. His name's Mike Shekiny. You know, I emailed him directly. I'm like, you know, I'd like to get back with the team. And I know this is something that, you know, you guys are going to start and I would love to help work on this. And then eventually, you know, I met with Mike and it all kind of worked out. And now I'm here with the Chiefs and came back at a great time, obviously, because I don't know if you guys have heard, but they went to a Super Bowl this past year, and they won, and it was a lot of fun. And I got to cover the entire thing in a way that, you know, I'd never could have dreamed of. So it's been, you know, not a complicated journey by any means, but, you know, got me here from all the way in Pennsylvania for that internship. So it's a lot of luck. And then, you know, when you do get lucky, just, you know, working to keep yourself in that position. So
You talked a little bit about the franchise series that you guys do. For people who haven't seen it, could you just kind of give us a little bit of a summary of what that is and what that looks like, and then maybe go into, you know, how you guys approach it, especially from an access standpoint? Because you talked about needing to build your access with the team. You know, how did you go about building that access, getting that access, and what do you do with it? How do you make the most of it?
Yeah, so the franchise is basically a documentary style show that is like a Hard Knocks or an All or Nothing, you know, two shows that NFL Films does, or, you know, any of the Last Chance You. It's just a documentary style take on the Chiefs and, you know, inside access type things. So miking, player mikings, you know, sideline sound, and then off the field features with the players to kind of get to know them a little more. So, you know, we hope that the on the field stories drive the off the field pieces. So if a guy has a good game, you know, we want to learn more about him, and then we can kind of weave and tie it into that. So that's one way we try to always build the shows, which is difficult. We released it on a bi-weekly basis this past year, and then around the holidays it went to like a 3-week, and then throughout the playoffs it was still a 2-week, and then we had the Super Bowl episode, which took about a month to finish ish. But each episode was 28 minutes and 30 seconds. We aired it on at least 28 minutes and 30 seconds. We aired on Fox Sports Midwest and Fox Sports Kansas City, as well as on all of our channels. So YouTube, Facebook, Watch. And then, yeah, as far as access goes, we didn't have, I mean, the thing is, we have access comparatively to like other teams, and it's good. And, you know, you can talk to other teams and they go, wow, you guys get a lot of access, but you always want more and more and more and more. So, we were able to get player micings from when I started in 2014. We were doing player micings, one a game, one for every home game. And eventually in 2015 or 2016, it pivoted to every game. So we were doing it at home and away games. And then this year specifically, when I came back, we also had a new director that was hired, Glenn Connolly from the Los Angeles Rams. And one of his like emphases was we need the sideline sound to help tell these game recaps. So that was one of the asks that we had. We had used a ground boom, you know, a boom mic, you know, attached to a camera, in 2015, I believe. And it worked, but I guess we just needed to ask again if we could do it again. So we did that. And then, that got approved. So Luke, Ben, and I, who are the two producers on the franchise, we have a little help from another one of our producers, John Matthews, for, you know, occasional features, but Luke and I are really the only two people that work on the show, which is nice to be able to like dedicate yourself, because you need to for a, you know, the show is a beast, and it's a lot of like, you know, it's a lot of edit time and shooting. And, you know, when you're not editing, you're shooting. Like, I had never worked that much on something before, but I never ever felt burnt out because the product was getting good like results. And it was fun to do, and it was something I wanted to do. So like, I mean, there'd be nights that we were here till 2, 3, and 4 in the morning, finishing a show to get it out, you know, to air by the next day, which is normal. But it was because we were trying to turn these game recaps from Sunday around in, you know, by Tuesday night, which is tough. You're like, you know, and the way that we edit them, you know, we're kind of rethinking that this year. So we can hopefully not kill ourselves with these game recaps, going through every bit of, you know, broadcast audio and, you know, radio audio and every angle and all this stuff. And, you know, because we want to give the best product, but a lot of our access comes from those game recaps. So it's from the player micings, from the sideline sound micings. We get all of NFL Films' angles. We also have a ton of shooters on the field. We have, you know, in-house with the Chiefs, we have 3 Aria Miras and an Alexa Mini that we just got this past offseason. We've got 2 Fujinon 20-120 lenses, an 85-300 Fujinon lens. We've got 2 Zeiss Primes that were still here when Brock was here. An 18 and a 35 millimeter. We've got a ton of EF glass. So, I mean, we've got everything covered, like, you know, as far as like shots on the field. So, we use all that stuff too. So that, I mean, that's a piece of the access too, is, you know, having that gear and having the ability to have that many different angles is incredible. So, but I mean, we're always hoping we can build upon that access. You know, we were able to get in a team meeting last year, which is something we'd never done in the past. So it was like when, you know, Coach Reed and Clark Hunt, the owner, and Mark Donovan, the president, they addressed the team for the first time at training camp. We were able to shoot that meeting, which was the first time that ever happened. So that was incredible to be able to get that access. And that show in particular is episode 6, I believe. It's like right when training camp starts, was probably the one where we got the most access. We had 2 off the field player features of like guys driving up to camp. Anthony Sherman, the fullback, he always wears like crazy things to camp. It's like his thing. And this year he drove up in a race car. So like we got to like unveil that, and we were at his house with all his crazy kids while he was like loading up into the race car and, you know, all that stuff. So it was crazy. And then we got, you know, Colin Saunders was a rookie. We drove up to camp with him for the first time, and he just had a newborn. So it was like saying goodbye to his newborn. Like that sort of piece was cool. So we had a ton of different, you know, vantage points. And then we had a miking segment that ended the show where we used like a bunch of different practices and combined it into, you know, as if it was the first day of practice, with like 4 different mikings, and just kind of faked it as if it was one day. But,
what people don't understand with access, especially in the NFL, is it takes time to like really build those relationships, not with the coaching staff, but with the players as well. Because when I was at the Chiefs, Anthony Sherman didn't want anything to do with us in the video department at all. He literally broke, we mic'd him up for a game because he finally agreed to be mic'd up, and he broke the mic on the opening kickoff intentionally. He ripped the head off of a Sennheiser Gold Lav, which was not a cheap thing. And then to see a couple years later, you guys at his house, you know, talking to him. Can you kind of talk about what it's like developing that relationship, not just from getting the GM and Coach Reed, Veach and Coach Reed, to say yes, but to getting individual players? Because in the NFL, it's not quite like college. There's not this blanket, you're doing this because we're saying so, or it's best for the team. It's, you really have to work on those individual player relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. So this year we took a different approach with the player pieces, because we found that it was a lot easier to get things done if we went directly to the player in like an open locker room setting. So we did that, and we would just kind of go up to a player. We'd be like, hey man, like, you know, I'm so-and-so. It'd be, you know, Luke or myself typically going up to one of them. We'd be like, you know, we work for the team. We work for the in-house video department. We work on the show, the franchise. Like, have you seen it? A lot of the time it was no. But sometimes it was like, oh yeah, that's the thing you did with this guy or something. They had seen a feature another player had done, which was good. So like once we started building up a bank of like guys who had done stuff, it was helpful to go with someone and be like, hey, did you see the thing like this guy did? And they could be like, yeah, I've seen that. I'm like, oh, we want to do something similar to you, like with you. And then they'd be more receptive to it. But it, you know, I think once they realize like we're not out to get them is the biggest thing. You know, I think that's a fear with a lot of guys, is when it comes to media, is like they're going to get, you know, someone's going to do this big hit piece on them, you know, or something, or they're going to use something they said out of context. But, you know, we're with the team. We're not trying to do that. We're just trying to tell your story is the biggest thing. And once they realize that, and that you're cool, and, you know, we're not trying to do anything malicious, then I think it's super easy to get them to buy in.
One of the things that I noticed in watching the franchise is your use of Nat sound in some elements, shooting in slow-mo. How do you think about when you're going into a shoot, how do you determine when you're going to shoot slow-mo without Nat sound? Are you capturing Nat sound on the side? And how do you go about that thought process?
Yeah, so we, for some of those things, you know, it's more discovered in the edit, you know? But as far as like when we capture, you know, full speed stuff, we tried to do a lot more full speed stuff with game recaps because it's so much easier to cut with. And it's a better feel. It feels more documentary style sometimes when it's real time, and it'll match up with like the radio audio a lot better. And it's so much easier to cut. Like I realized that with the AFC championship game, or no, the divisional game when we played the Texans, we had a ton of like shooters that were shooting just real speed stuff, and that was great. And then just using the Nat, and sometimes we'll steal Nat sound from different cameras, or sometimes it's fake and it's from another, you know, thing. But a lot of times we have just a, you know, a NTG4 Rode mic on each of our cameras, and that's capturing that sound when it's not recording in slow-mo. But the slow-mo aspect, I think it all depends sort of, you know, in game, we'll have different cameras that are set up for different things. So we had like the Alexa Mini with like a 50 to 1,000 for certain playoff games, the Canon 50 to 1,000. And that would shoot primarily slow-mo because it can get so tight and like those shots are really cool. But I mean, a lot of our shooters will bounce around too. Like, you know, there's some guys who shoot like shoulder stuff with a broadcast lens and they'll bounce between 24 and, you know, 48, 60, 96 frames, 120, you know, whatever they feel like is the moment. So a lot of it's relied heavily upon, you know, how the shooter feels in that moment. So we give a lot of freedom to whoever's shooting, you know, if they feel like maybe I'll shoot slow-mo here, maybe I'll shoot full speed. That's kind of just what we work with. And then, you know, it depends on how the edit is coming together, when we'll throw to that clip or throw to this clip. But primarily Luke and I behind the sideline, shooting sideline sound, have to be in 24. So sometimes we would shoot, you know, if we're like, there's nothing going on the bench, like these guys are not talking, we would just go to the side and just shoot with a 20 to 120 and then try to get as tight as we can and just get some action in 24. Cause that was sometimes useful as cutaways or, you know, just B-roll if it ended up being a good play or if it was a bad play and we could tell that side of the story. So I think it just kind of all depends, but we give our shooters a lot of freedom to bounce between it. And then we kind of figure out after the fact.
You know, this year you got to shoot a Super Bowl. What was that like? There are not a lot of people that get to shoot championship events. I know we've had Corrine on here earlier who got to, and, you know, she gave our boy Justin a little crap about the rings. But, you know, for you, what was that like to be able to do it? How did you think about it differently than, you know, a normal game, or did you approach it like a normal game?
Yeah, we got down there a week early. So Super Bowl week is basically 2 weeks. We get down there the week before and then, you know, it's a lot of media and that sort of stuff. So we got down there on, I think it was Sunday, a week before on a Sunday, we got down there. So, you know, we treat the travel the same. We're still shooting guys, getting off the plane, getting on the plane, that sort of stuff. And then the week, you know, we shot the media night and that was nuts. And I mic'd up, Mecole Hardman, who was a rookie wide receiver, and followed him around for like the entire like media day. And he's just gold. Like anytime you throw a mic on him, he's just like such a, you know, he has such an amazing personality and he's like so funny and he'll like talk to anybody. So he was great to just mic up and do that. I mean, we kind of treated it normally, but we, you know, just more emphasis on like, we need to capture like everything because we don't know when this is going to happen again. So like, we were at, you know, everything and, you know, it felt like training camp because we were in a hotel, you know, sort of like how we'd be in a dorm, you know, when we go away for training camp, and you're like around the team more because you're in the same hotel as them. And it's a longer process and you're away from, you know, home for a lot longer than just a weekend, like you would be for a, you know, a typical travel, game. But then, you know, when the game did come up, it was like, we have to shoot everything. Like we shot the day before, we shot the locker room being set up. We shot a ton of scenics like outside the stadium. You know, we had people like shooting fans at the tailgates and that sort of thing. And then like we shot players arriving and, coaches arriving. It was like, we need to cover every single piece of this, which we try to do for games, but I mean, you know, it's a week 8 game and, you know, we're playing someone who's not very good. We're probably going to be less inclined to be like, let's really blow this one out, guys. So, you know, the Super Bowl though, that's obviously like, we need to blow this out. So we had rented, another Amira. So we had 5 there or 4 Amiras and an Alexa Mini. So we felt like NFL films, which was cool. But it's just like, it's an incredible atmosphere. Like the whole time we just were out on the field for like pregame and for warmups and that sort of thing. And it's just like a different vibe. You know, you hear a lot of stuff and it's like, the Super Bowl crowds are not that loud because it's a lot of like corporate sponsors who are there. It's like what I expected. I'm like, it's not going to be that loud. There aren't going to be any Chiefs fans. There's not going to be any Niners fans there. And it was crazy how loud it was. That was like one of the loudest games for like an outdoor game. You know, it felt like we were at Arrowhead. It was pretty crazy. But yeah, like, and then it was just trying to capture for my perspective, you know, we were shooting on the sideline. And it was just trying to capture the game like we typically would. We didn't really change a lot. You know, we were following the same guys and we were kind of going through the same protocols of like when somebody scores, we follow them through. you know, we try to pick up some stuff on the bench with the boom on the conversations that are going, especially like when we got down, you know, we kind of knew that that was going to be a story if they came back and won. So we were able to tell that too, which was cool. And we knew that we had a lot of the film's micings that we were going to get. So that was good to have as like a story vehicle as well. But from like the sideline perspective, yeah, there was like when we were down, I remember specifically like Damian Williams, the running back, he kept like going up to guys and being like, you know, like we're not going to give up and that sort of thing. And it's hard to tell what's going on in the game when you're just behind the bench the entire time, but you know that they're down. And you start hearing that, you're like, okay, like I'm getting confident. Like, cause you feel down a little bit. You're like, oh, we're losing. This is going to be tough. But you hear stuff like that and you're like, oh, this is gold. Like we're getting really good stuff if they come back and win. So, yeah, we kind of treat it like a normal game and then just try to capitalize on those moments where things do happen. And you're just almost like more hypersensitive to like things because it's on a bigger stage and it means so much more.
I think, to jump back a little bit and I'm going to get a little bit on my soapbox here and say again that audio is the most important part of video. And I think that shows in the franchise. I think there's a lot of teams that do NFL Hard Knocks style shows, right? In college pros. I mean, Garrett, that's how what you did at Minnesota, right? But in my opinion, what sets there's two things really that set those shows apart, the good and the bad shows apart, the ones that are closer to NFL films, the ones that are further away. One is obviously the story, like content is king, right? I'm never going to say, so really content is the most important part of video, but we're not talking about that right now. The second is audio. Can you talk about the time you put into your sound design and your audio mix? Because when you watch the franchise, it just sounds natural, right? And that's, to me, is the hardest thing to do because it's not natural. You talked about it. There's a lot of fake sound in there. There's a lot of pulled in, you know, nat sound from old melts, old shoots, that sort of stuff. So what's your time like spent on just strictly sound design to maybe inform some of our younger listeners who don't think they need to spend a lot of time on sound design or don't know how much time they need to spend on sound design?
Sound design is critical for like what we do because like you said, we want to make it seem as real as possible. So we spend a lot of time on sound design and I find it like super satisfying when like I can go through and, you know, find things and I'm like, oh, that matches really well or that works perfect. So a lot of the time, like I'll kind of build it as I go in an edit, like in a timeline, you know, I'll start laying, you know, well, first you work with like an interview audio if you have that, but I mean, it's different for every, you know, situation. The game recaps are a little different. We'll kind of storyboard those out based on like how the game went. But I'll kind of build out sound design as we go. And yeah, it's critical. I mean, I'm kind of like I don't know what the word is.
Particular type A
masochist is one that's like, come out.
Yeah,
quite
probably
a bit.
Like type A. I want it to be perfect. Mm-hmm. I want the sound design to be perfect, so I spend probably more time than I should on making sure things are good. It's, you know, dissolving things into another so it seems seamless. It's keeping those like pops out on edits or if you're on cuts, like dissolving everything because that's huge. You know, dissolving between interview bites. You know, I don't want it to seem like a cut because that's the first thing that'll throw a viewer off and be like, oh, I'm watching something. Cause you want them to not, you know, my philosophy is you don't want them to be like, oh, I'm watching TV right now. You kind of want them to get so immersed that they don't realize they're like watching something, I guess. Cause they know they're watching something, but you know, you want them to get into it where they don't realize it. Or that something has been edited. You know, you don't want to hear that cause that's the first thing that'll throw somebody off. Like you said, audio is so important. And that's like, you know, you guys have said this on here before, but you can forgive bad video, but if the audio is bad, that's the first thing that's going to throw the viewer off. And I completely agree with that.
It's wild to me. I've judged, you know, Emmy entries before, both at the regional and national level. And when I do it, I always do it with headphones on, you know, good headphones. And it's unbelievable how many like video pops you hear, or audio pops you hear on, you know, an edit, a cut point or something that's like, okay, I know you just stitched those two bites together. I know that, and it's okay. Like everyone does it. We do it on the journey. We stitch together. But as soon as you hear that audio edit, to me, it just takes me out of it completely. I could not agree with you more. I think sound design is so important and it's a really neglected part. Like to see that many pieces, you know, that are getting nominated for awards that are just willing to not pay that close of attention blew my mind when I started doing that.
Yeah, I think I'm like a huge stickler for, you know, like attention to detail and that sort of stuff. So, you know, any little thing like that, I'm going to fix it or find a way to fix it or something, because like, yeah, it's going to completely draw the viewer away from what the main point is of what you're trying to show.
Right. And I think people, when they hear sound design, they think movie trailer, right? Like bass drops and hits. But what you need to realize is the amount of attention to detail that goes into the next Mission Impossible trailer sound design needs to be the attention to detail you put into making a room sound like a room, right? Like even if you're not adding a bass drop and you're just trying to like add ambient sound to like bridge a gap in an interview bite, like it's equally as important, right? You just don't hear it as much on the user side.
Yeah, that's like you know, touching on some of the stuff that at Cerner, which helped me, you know, in my career development, was we shot an entire, you know, I think it was 6 or 7 different videos that were, you know, shot in 6K, and they were going to go in this cinema for clients to come in and look at, and they were like, you know, client testimonials but with actors. And we didn't hire a sound engineer because it wasn't in like the budget. So we shot with no sound, and everything in post was completely like Foley'd and ADR'd. And I had to learn how to do ADR, and I Foley'd the entire thing. And Foley is, you know, like sound design. So footsteps and footsteps on concrete and, you know, running and car doors shutting, you know, a plate getting set down. So I had to go through and like meticulously do each of that. And that is, it's time consuming and it's pretty meticulous, but for me, it's very satisfying. Kind of like I said earlier, like when you get that plate on the counter and it makes that perfect clink, it's like, oh, that's real. And, you know, my favorite part was showing, you know, other people I worked with, like, hey, just watch this back real quick. Let me know what you think. And like not showing them the audio timeline and then being like, yeah, it looks good. I'm like, nothing seemed like weird. Like, no. I'm like, okay, great. That's perfect. You don't want any of that to be off, because that'll completely throw it off. But yeah, that was a process, but that's helped me with sound design a ton. It's just like having to do things like that.
Can we get into the Foley part a little bit? Because I think that's interesting and something that not a lot of people probably have any experience with. What is unique about trying to get the Foley right when you were going back and doing those footsteps and some of those kind of capturing?
Yeah, so I never actually captured. I actually used like a, you know, just sound effects packs that we had. So it was more of like digging for the right one and trying to line it up. We could shoot it. And I know Brock did that when we did like a anthem type spot when Brock was here, him and Kevin Brebner. I think Adam worked on that too. But yeah, Brock got a shotgun mic and they were like recording like matches being lit and coals burning. And those like files are still on our server. And sometimes I'll like stumble upon them like, oh, this is hilarious. Because just Brock being like match lighting, and then you just hear like, and it's good, and it worked, and you can't tell. Like when I watched it back the first time, I didn't know he did that till like I found out that he did that. So it's, yeah, I mean, it
my
would
favorite
be
part of that is on that song, we actually, it didn't start the way Kevin and I wanted it to start. So I brought in my MIDI keyboard and my guitar, and Kevin and I re-recorded the intro to this APM song and then transitioned to the full song. And we asked like 20 different people, like, hey, do you hear anything weird with this? And people were like, no, or they'd pick out something like completely arbitrary that wasn't, but nobody could tell that like we totally went in, matched the guitar tone, matched the synth pad, and then like transitioned to like this full song. But to be fair, just doing that part, it was literally 15 seconds, or not even that, it was 10 seconds of a minute long spot. That took a week to a week and a half to like.
I remember
all day,
you,
every day.
I remember being in this same edit suite that I'm in right now, and at the Chiefs we have 2 edit suites, and they're back to back, and they share a wall. And Brock was in this one behind me, and I just remember hearing the same riff over and over for like a week, and I'm like, oh man, this is like a lot. Like he was, yeah.
Attention to detail.
But we could, you know,
Brock.
It's attention to detail, right? That's exactly it. I think. It's really easy in our industry to sacrifice that attention to detail. And sometimes it's necessary. You have quick turnarounds and not everything requires that attention to detail. But I think it's really easy to get into a rhythm and just say, oh, this isn't the way I want it, but you know, who cares? Right. But there need to be those projects. Garrett, I'm sure you feel the same way when you do a journey episode, you know, Justin, I'm sure you feel the same way on a lot of projects. Like there are just those projects that, you know, you need to have that attention to detail on, because otherwise you're letting yourself down. Right. And having that attention to detail, I think, just makes you a better producer, and editor overall. And it's like, no, you know what? I'm going to take the time and I'm going to make this the way I think it needs to be made. Because I really want to work out my creative vision here, and put my stamp on it and make sure it's the way I want it to be interpreted. That's the wrong word. Not interpreted, but delivered. Delivered's the right word, right?
Yeah, I feel like with anything like that, I'm always getting like, I feel like sometimes too in the weeds with things. I'm like, I've just spent like way too long doing this, but you know, it's worth it in the end because, you know, you are getting the best thing that you can do.
And I think that there's a fine line there too of, you know, picking your battles within the industry and which projects that you're going to dedicate the most attention to. Like, obviously none of us want to turn in, you know, a half-assed project or anything like that. But if you give yourself, you know, full bore into every project, you're going to burn out quick, right? I think that's something that everyone in this industry can identify with is the idea of burnout. And, you know, it happens, you know, whether on a big scale where you just need to get out of your job, or, you know, a little scale where you just need to step back from a project for a few minutes. But, you know, how have you dealt with burnout in your industry? I know you mentioned it a little bit in going into the corporate sector, but now that you're back in sports, how do you handle that burnout? How do you deal with it when it comes up now?
Yeah. Luckily, we're pretty fortunate that Luke and I primarily only work on the franchise. So kind of once that's done for the week, we can kind of, all right, you know, but we start working on, you know, episodes coming up because it really never stops. And once you finish, and even before we finish an episode, we're already thinking about what are we going to do for the next one. We're starting to map out in spreadsheets, like how are we going to, you know, what are we going to put here? We know we have these games. What else can we tie around the games? And that's sort of up in the air until we get stuff nailed down with players, or if, you know, there's other things we're trying to do, or if there's like initiatives that, you know, the team is trying to push that maybe we can shoot, or the league is trying to push. But so what's nice is, like I said, I mean, there were nights, you know, Tuesdays were, you know, sometimes dreaded days. We'd get here super early and we wouldn't be done with the show until 3 or 4 in the morning. I think the latest we were over here was like 4:30 and we'd export it out. But then the next day it's like, we're sleeping in. Like I can't get here at 8:30. Like I'm going to get in at like 11 and we'll finish, you know, all the web pieces that we need to do, for the show, you know, clipping, you know, promos out or getting the web version ready for YouTube and that sort of thing. And then once we're done with that, you know, I'm going to bounce out again. So, you know, Wednesday was pretty light. We would get what we needed done, eat lunch and then leave. And then, you know, Thursday, Friday, try to ramp up for the next episode. So, you know, it's taking time when it's necessary. And then, you know, this off season, it's obviously been a different one. But this has been good to get a little downtime after a long year. We started the franchise last year in April or May. I think it was middle of May, and it went all the way to February. So like we had been cutting that for, you know, months and months and months. And, you know, luckily it was on a 2-week, a bi-weekly or a tri-weekly basis. But if it was weekly, that would have been bad. But for just two people to have to work on. But, you know, there was downtime and we didn't really burn ourselves out. But the NFL season luckily is short too, comparatively. You know,
yes,
only
it is.
17 games plus the preseason. It's not that bad. And you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, looking forward to that. And the bye week too, we took some time on the bye week. That's why we kind of extended some of those episodes to tri-weekly, to get a little time off. So it's just like implementing some of those breaks ahead. So then, you know, like, okay, bye. You know, when we get to Christmas, when we get to Thanksgiving, we're on 3 weeks, we can kind of slow down a little bit. But, you know, most of the time we were, you know, it was kind of a 9 to 5, 9 to 6 most days, unless we had shoots after, you know, after work. But we were able to work pretty efficiently to get things done and not really burn ourselves out a ton, which was good. And it helped that, you know, we were able to just solely focus on that. I mean, that's not something that we can, that everybody can do. You know, we have a large enough staff that it's possible for two people to focus solely on one thing.
Yeah. I think the resources part of that and, you know, having a good manager, having good people above you that understand, you know, the mental health aspect, the burnout aspect of it, and making sure that, you know, you're focusing on the production, but there's a people cost to that too. And if you have a good manager that understands that, that goes a long way to letting you sleep in on a Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was huge.
And I think I think a big part of it too is culture, right? You know, there was a point in time at the Chiefs that it was not a good culture for mental health. It was very much so like, I don't want to leave before other people leave because I want to work as hard as they work. I don't want to feel like I'm letting people down. And I think that took a long time to change at the Chiefs, and I know the Chiefs aren't the only place that do that. But can you talk a little bit about that, Dane, that transition from like, you know, mentally being young in your career and this whole like, oh, I don't want to leave before my manager leaves because that's a bad look for me. When in reality, it's not, right? But what did it take for that shift in your mind to go from that like mentality to what it is now of like, my value isn't dependent on how long I'm at the office?
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, it's tough, and it was mentally difficult when, you know, when I was here from 14 to 16, and it started getting a little better by 17. By the time I started leaving, I'm sure if I would have stuck around, it would have completely shifted to how it is today. But it was tough. I mean, there'd be people here super late and they'd be working on shows, but it'd be like, shoot, like, you know, I especially young, you want to prove your value and that, you know, you're not just like, you know, screwing around, that, you know, you're working. So you kind of wanted to stick around. And it was tough. I mean, it was, luckily I was like a single guy at the time and it was young and I could just do that. And you had no one to go home and answer to. It's like, why are you there so late? Well, you don't need to be. But what really took like the culture shift, and it's one of the reasons that I left, is I wanted, you know, sort of a better culture where I could, you know, there was a better work-life balance. 'Cause that was one of the reasons I felt like I needed to leave, because I needed that. You know, I started dating my girlfriend at the time, and it was very serious. We had moved in 2017 with each other, after dating for like a year. We still are together, and we just bought a house, which is great. But, yeah, it was, you know, I didn't want to, you know, I wanted to spend more time with her and spend time in the apartment and that sort of stuff. And she had just started, she decided she was going to go back to school for a physical therapy assistant. And I knew that I wanted a job that was, I knew I wanted a different job, and I wanted a job that was still in Kansas City. So I was only looking really in Kansas City jobs, even though she was super supportive of me going elsewhere, and finding another job in sports, you know, you know, somewhere else in the country, even though we'd be apart, which was, she was totally fine with that and supportive of whatever I wanted to do, which is awesome. And, but I didn't want to leave, because I didn't want to do the whole long distance thing. So, you know, the job at Cerner popped up and I took that. And that was when I realized I like found real work-life balance. I remember being there. I started in Thanksgiving of 2017. And it was like the Wednesday, they do like a weird 3-day training. So it was like 3 days of training before you can even go to the office, which is a very corporate thing. And then I started on, so it was like the, or maybe it was 2 days of training. So it was like a Monday, Tuesday before that Thursday that was Thanksgiving. And then the Wednesday, I went into the office for the first time and like did a bunch of web-based training they make you do and stuff. But there was like no one in the office. It was like the manager showed up and he like introduced himself to me that I had like interviewed with. And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna head out though. He was there for like an hour and then he left. And I was like the only one in there. And I'm like, what the heck? And like people, like there were maybe 5 people there and they start leaving probably by like lunch. And I'm like trying to finish these like trainings on my computer. And they're like, hey man, like you should get out of here, like this is your first day, like you should get out of here. I'm like, what is going on? This place is weird. And you know, when we got back from that Thanksgiving break, you know, that's what I was like finding out. It's like people leave at 5 on the dot, and I was like, this is weird. And I was there till like 5:30, and I was the only one in like this cube area that we had like an open floor plan. And I'm like looking around, I'm like, I'm the only one left in here. This is so weird. But eventually, like, you know, I started doing that and the work was super easy at Cerner. And I started like realizing that if I could finish, you know, it's like, if I'm finished with all my stuff, I'm not just going to sit here. So, I mean, there were days that I could leave by like 3:30 or 4, you know, because I had been so accustomed to the environment in sports and in the NFL, where you're churning out so much stuff each week. It was like, I had one video to do a week. I'm like, are you serious? Like, I'm going to finish this today. So, you know, it was like, that was just a good culture where people were not trying to, you know, burn themselves out, and, you know, taking a little bit of that to be like, you know, if your stuff is done, and you also have to be in the same, you know, you have to be in an environment where that culture is accepted. And I think now the Chiefs are sort of like that, because I think they've realized that the burnout, you know, problem is real. And, you know, they're more willing to just be like, you know, as long as your stuff is done and everything's good, like, get out of here. Don't kill yourself. Or, you know, if it can get done tomorrow morning, like, finish it tomorrow morning. You know, don't be here till midnight unless you have to be, because you have a show that needs to air the next day and you need to be there till 4 a.m. But that's more of a me problem and procrastinating than a Chiefs problem.
I think Justin and I were talking about this a little bit earlier in Slack about just how, you know, it's hard for, you know, especially new employees or new people in the industry to say no, or say like, hey, I need more work-life balance, or I need to do this or that, right? But it takes from the management side down to say, to let people know that that's okay, right? I think as you move up in your career, you feel a little more comfortable, you know, saying like, oh, you know, I got to go pick up my kid today. I got to leave at 4:30, you know, like, not a big deal. But it's harder to do that when you're the low person, you know, on the pole, right? Like, that gets a little bit tougher unless it's instilled, you know, really from the top down.
Yeah, that was one of the things I found at Cerner. It was like, we had like a shared calendar with everyone in our like creative services department. And so you'd get email updates all the time. Like, this person, like, got to leave at 3. My kids got to go to the dentist, got to do this. It was a lot. I was like, man, all these people have kids. And I'm like, so like, I was like the only one who didn't have a kid. So it was like, but I mean, it makes sense. Like, I wasn't ever going to judge someone because they had to, you know, like, oh, you can't get your work done, you got to go pick up your kid. Like, no, that's not the right thing to do. So you do have to have that work-life balance. And yeah, like you said, it starts from the top. And, you know, we're definitely in that position now where as long as your stuff is done, you know, there's no need to do that and to just sit here and waste time.
Well, especially because when, you know, at the top, a lot of the people up that have higher roles are likely not the people who are in the weeds staying until midnight. So because, you know, I guess from my perspective, it was always when I got out to Boston, we had there was two of us as digital videographers and we were churning content. I was there until 2:30 in the morning churning content. So when I was in a position to be able to turn around, I was like, I got to improve that for the rest of my team. And obviously growing the team and adding resources is a big part of that as well, to try and make that work-life balance a little bit easier. But it's easy when you go home to go, well, everyone else is going home when I go home, and not realizing that, hey, we have a game on the West Coast. So that means somebody's staying up till 2 a.m. to do something. And hey, let's chat about that. How can we make some adjustments and, you know, figure out how we can all get together and make sure that you don't feel like, you know, 82 games later that playoffs come and it's like, man, I need a break, you know? So trying to keep that up front and on the surface is really important.
And I was just going to say, I mean, even just as an employee, you know, I've managed people and obviously I've been managed by people. And when you have that culture of trust built, and you just tend to get employees that are willing to manage up. And that's the thing that I've learned most, is as an employee, I need to manage up. I need to talk to my supervisor when I need something. I need to talk to my supervisor when, you know, hey, I don't feel like this thing you did is fair, or, you know, there's an issue with it. If you're managing, you know, to the people above you, if there's that culture of trust, you get that. And that's always what I tried to instill with people that I supervise too, where, you know, hey, I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to screw this up. Like, if you need something, like, speak up and tell me. And that's something I didn't do well at the start of my career. I didn't manage up. I didn't talk to my supervisor, you know, because I was scared. You know, when you're the low man on the pole, like you said, it's, you just never want to be the one rocking the boat. And I think that culture of trust is big, and that's where it has to start. Because once you have that, then you get an organization where, like, people can be honest with each other, and it makes all the difference in the world in that work-life balance from there.
I think there's been a shift too in the industry over the past 10 years since I've been in it, where this whole, like, pay your dues culture, right, when you're younger, is kind of going away. And early on in my career, I would catch myself doing it, and I would be like, oh, I ate shit for years doing this and this. You have to do it too. And it's like, well, no, it was wrong then, right? Like, I got taken advantage of. I'm pretty sure everybody in this group got taken advantage of early on in their career, but that's not good to perpetuate that, especially when people move into management positions. You know, you need to look back and realize that you were taken advantage of. I worked for no pay for a long time. Dane came to the Chiefs to a no pay internship, which I believe is illegal across the board now. I don't remember. But either way, like, that was not a good deal, right? Like, that was not a good deal. That's since changed. I don't think the Chiefs have unpaid internships.
No, but we don't even have it's strictly like a seasonal program. So it's only through the season. Right. We don't do anything in the off season, and they get paid. Yeah. And across the board, it's every department. It's not just us.
Right. But, like, yeah, I remember my first year at Husker Vision was, we had like a $500 stipend that worked out to be, like, I believe it was 8 cents an hour or something stupid like that. But it's just like, that can't be the norm. And the only way that changes is when people who experience that actively try and change that when they move up in the industry. And I think we're starting to see a lot of people get out of that mentality of, like, well, I ate shit, so you have to eat shit, and therefore it's got to be miserable for you to get into this industry. And that just can't be the way it is.
Yeah. Well, going back to Dan, I just wanted to go back to when you talked about coming to the Chiefs for an unpaid internship over the MTV internship that was paid, that was technically a train ride away. I think, you know, going back to the conversation we had with Chris DeReicher, that was his primary, that's what he suggested to young people coming into the industry, is you're not always going to get to go down the street or work for your hometown team. So it's interesting that you did take an unpaid internship over getting paid, because at that point, at the end of college, you're like, I need to get paid. I need that money, right? Like, I have to live. So I'm curious, after doing that and getting to the Chiefs and getting the experience that you got, yes, you said you did want to work in sports, but there has to be a little bit more to that. And what other experiences or thought processes went through your mind on making that decision?
It was a lot. And, I listened to that episode with Chris, and it was great. And I really resonated with what he was saying about having to travel for what you want. And for a lot of younger people in this industry or who want to get into this industry, it's crucial to travel where the jobs are. Because, you know, I grew up in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. There is not a sports team there that I want to work for anyway. I mean, there's, like, you know, smaller minor league baseball teams, but, you know, that wasn't, you know, the goal that I had for myself. So I was applying to a bunch of different sports jobs. I had a interview for an internship with the Lancaster Barnstormers, which are a like small minor league baseball team. Didn't get that one. I think I interviewed with the actual GM of the team, which was weird. And I think it was probably not for a job that I would have wanted. But
the fine print said you had to play second base as well. That was the issue. Right. You had
And I couldn't do that. So yeah, that was it for me. But yeah, so I applied for that MTV job and I got that. And that was going to be in Times Square at the Viacom building. And that's where I interviewed for it. And I basically heard back almost the same day. I got a call from Brad Young, who does our game presentation and is like works on the video board side of things here. And he was like in charge of the internship program at the time. And he called me and, you know, basically interviewed me. He just talked to me for like 3 minutes and then called me back, and he's like, yeah, you got the job, which is totally Brad, if you guys know Brad. But I emailed Viacom like right away, and I'm like, hey, I just got offered an internship, like, you know, I just need to hear back on what you guys were thinking. And they're like, yeah, no, you got it, and you'll get paid and all that stuff. And, you know, it was, the biggest thing was like sitting down with my parents and being like, you know, like I can keep making money and stay at home, or like I'm going to have to, you know, figure out a way to go to Kansas City. I didn't know anything about Kansas City. I'm from the East Coast, so I didn't really know anything. I thought it was going to be, you know, didn't think there was a real city here. There is, for people who are wondering. You know, luckily they were super supportive. They're like, you know, you love sports. You've played sports your whole life. You know, this is like the perfect culmination of what you want to do. Like, just take a leap of faith. And they were really supportive with, you know, financially helping me, and them, my aunt and my grandparents as well, were awesome. I wouldn't have been able to do, you know, be where I am without them. And also student loans. I took out like an additional student loan to be able to move out here and get everything. But it was more of like, I knew at MTV, I would just be sitting there transcribing interviews and just typing. It would be all busy work and very, you know, I wouldn't really learn anything like I could if I went to an actual organization. And it was true. I mean, I don't know anyone who went through the MTV internship, but I would assume it's similar to that. And there's not a lot of, you know, actual hands-on experience that you'd get. But I was editing features when I was an intern for the magazine style that we were doing called Red and Gold, magazine style show that we were doing called Red and Gold. So I was editing coach features, and Brad was giving me feedback, and Brock was helping me with audio compression and how we were going to do edits and that sort of thing. And I was helping on our documentary style show called Chiefs Kingdom, which is more of a historical doc, sort of like a football life. But I was helping on those shoots, and I was on shoots, and I was getting more hands-on experience than I could have ever got at MTV. So I think realizing that was good for me to be able to make that decision. It was a tough one. And, you know, I went back and forth on the idea. It's like, you know, that was a huge, you know, fork in the road moment for me, because I could have went to MTV, but who knows where I would be. Like, I, you know, I'd probably have a weird corporate job somewhere. You know, I wouldn't be in sports, but, you know, luckily I chose the right path and, you know, got lucky along the way and took advantage of when the luck hit, and, you know, made sure that, you know, I impressed the right people and kept going in the industry. So, yeah, I think hopefully I know I made the right decision, but yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Consistent hard work and a little sacrifice in the beginning to get you started, sounds like. So I think that's pretty consistent across.
You know, my side of that is, like, you know, Dame was very fortunate that he was able to take out a student loan and have that support, you know, but that's why I feel like those internships need to be paid, because think of all the people who don't have that support, you know, or can't take out that loan, you know, or need just like the bare minimum financial compensation to live, right? We got really lucky with Dane, because when we hired Dane, I'll never forget it. And I love Brad Young. He's one of my favorite people ever. He called me really mad at me about the live podcast because I said my graphics were still used in Stadium, I think, which is true. Yeah. This is Chiefs Kingdom.
They needed to remove them.
Yeah, they are. He was like, "When was the last time you were even in Arrowhead?" I was like, 2018 for the playoff game. But they are.
On the 50, I corrected him. 1,000?
They are. Maybe they're not now. I don't know. But Brad, we didn't have many for whatever reason. Well, probably because it wasn't paid. Not for whatever reason. It's because it wasn't paid. We didn't have a ton of applicants for that internship position. And you had to get college credit. So that really narrows it down. And Brad was in charge of it. And he shows me Dane's demo reel. And I think me and Kevin and Adam were like, "I don't know, man, this guy has like no sports experience," or "you had like a very little bit." And Brad was like, "Yeah, but he's really funny." And we're just like, okay. So we hired Dane because Brad thought he was really funny. And we got really lucky with it. You know, we got so lucky that Dane turned out to be, you know, one of our best producers. But that could have went a very different way. And sometimes on those internships, it totally did. But the whole reason we hired Dane was just because we didn't have many applicants. And yeah, Dane was funny.
Yeah, I didn't have any sports experience. I worked for the university, and I shot a lot of like lectures and things, and I was a student worker at I went to East Stroudsburg University, which is a small D2 school in Pennsylvania, about 30 minutes from where I grew up, and it was cheap and close, and it was easy. But
my boy James Franklin,
yes, proud alum,
Big Ten tie,
yeah,
right there.
I love it. He's the man. He actually spoke at my commencement ceremony. He was our commencement speaker, which was awesome. But So I worked as a student worker there, and then I worked for a local TV station, Blue Ridge Communications, TV 13, and they did local high school games remote in a remote truck, and I ran replay for them. So I had a little bit of live experience, and then I would do like some Red Cross telethons through the university, and I would direct those and TD and that sort of stuff, run camera. So I had like live experience, but the only sports, I had never shot sports before I got to the Chiefs. The first game I ever shot, I shot on P2, and it was in San Diego when the Chargers still in San Diego, and I shot a game there, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to go for it. And like the first, like that was like the first game ever. And, you know, I've come a long way since then, but it was just kind of diving in head first and being like, all right, well, let's just do this and see how it turns out. And luckily I had support of other producers to be like, yeah, let's give this kid who's never shot a camera and see what happens.
Luckily, I'm totally
mess it up too bad.
I'm totally joking. The reason we hired Dane is the same reason. I know I've said it on our hiring podcast. I would rather hire somebody with no experience who has the drive and motivation to learn anything and everything than somebody who has a ton of experience at an entry level position, you know, and thinks they know a lot, but doesn't have the drive to change their view or learn new things. And Dane was a perfect example of, he just showed that he wanted to learn everything, anything and everything, and didn't care what it was, and just wanted to dive in head first. And that's what made Dane successful. You know, it wasn't that he was funny, although that was part of it. But the real reason we hired Dane is because in his interview, you know, he showed that he wanted to learn and he wanted to get that experience.
Yeah,
now
it's huge.
Now
for
he's got more rings than
anybody
all of us.
Coming in. Learn as much as you can, and it'll take you a long way. Even if it's, you know, small little things, it'll come up at some point in your career, and you'll remember that moment and think back, and you'll know what to do.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over into the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your other fellow creatives. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us a 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.